You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 294 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Action Comics 2022 Annual Number 1, Batman 2022 Annual Number 1, Shadow War Omega Number 1, Justice League Road to Dark Crisis Number 1, DC Pride 2022 Number 1, The Flash Season 8 Episode 19, Negative Part 1, and Superman and Lois Season 2 Episode 15, Waiting for Superman. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, up first for DC News. The first episode of Talkville, where Tom Welling and Michael Rosenbaum sit down to rewatch episodes of the TV series Smallville, is now available to listen to. Released on July 13th, the episode is available at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and other platforms. A new episode of Talkville will drop each Wednesday.
What a great idea for a podcast, Drew. I'm sure they'll get the listeners that. I mean, we already know, because you and I have both spouted our praise for Rosenbaum's other show, Inside of You, and now doing another one here with Tom Wellington, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm actually excited about it. The thing about this is it's not just two guys reviewing every episode. We're going to get inside scoop on stuff they remember from, you know, doing these episodes. So I'm kind of excited to check it out. I'm actually thinking about, you know, rewatching the series with them and, you know, listening to it every week.
So. I think that's a great way to listen to the podcast, honestly. And just obviously vastly more interesting to listen to than two schmucks like us.
So, yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. I'm excited about it. I'll be checking it out. And last for DC News, DC's Stargirl full Season 3 trailer was released by the CW. And that's coming really soon. Like we said, I think it was last week, we saw that it was released on August 31st, and that's early for a CW show.
It is, but I did see, Drew, on Facebook, our friend of the podcast, Nathan Laws, mentioned that the show needed word on whether it was renewed sooner, so that's partly why it's airing sooner, so that the network can make up its mind. That's at least what he mentioned, and he usually knows what he's talking about, so it makes sense. And honestly, I thought it made a ton of sense as to why the show is debuting so early comparatively to what we usually see.
That's interesting. Now, I saw the trailer, and it looked like Season 3, looks like Stargirl is going to be trained by Starman, and that looked interesting. Of course, we had, you know, the one villain family move next door to her. I'm sure that's going to be an interesting dynamic. And I'm also interested in what's going to happen with Jade and her brother this season, because they kind of teased that last season too. I didn't see anything about that in the trailer, which is fine. I didn't really need to see the trailer to watch the show. It's one of our better CW shows that we watch, and I'm excited about it. I'm actually excited about this fall lineup we're going to have coming up with Stargirl, and we're going to be watching the last season of Legends, which we're a little behind on, but I'm still excited about it.
Just a little.
and Sandman too. So excited about that lineup.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, Drew. In my opinion, the best show on the CW, but I feel strongly that that's because it's not really a CW show compared to the rest of them. Like, it's very obvious that it came from a different, quote, network, so obviously streaming service, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, much like how Superman and Lois is typically the best of the true CW crop because it's not like the other shows, even more so with Stargirl, where there's just a clearly higher production value. A little more care taken usually with the script, and it shows. The trailer, I just want to echo exactly what you said, Jude. The trailer, obviously, I'm going to watch the show either way. It looked good. It appeared to me, Drew, at least from the, and again, it's only like a couple minute trailer. It seemed like it might be a little bit lower stakes this season, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think one thing you don't want to get caught up in as a show is continuously trying to up the ante. I think that's one thing in the middle of its lifespan that kind of happened to Arrow, where they kept trying to go bigger and bigger, and eventually they got a little beyond Green Arrow's pay grade in terms of threat level, nuclear bombs. So I think, again, obviously we'll see. We don't know for sure how the plot and what the threat level is going to be, but it seemed like it was going to kind of keep the stakes low, and I think that's probably a good move by the show.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially how dark last season went. So, but it looks like it's going to be a fun season, so I'm excited about it. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
This Labor Day weekend, fandom is calling. Let Michael, Mike, Darren, and Jen help you answer the call with the latest news, notes, tips, and tricks on the DragonCon Report. Available as an audio podcast, visit DragonConReport.com, and for the first time ever, watch us on video via Facebook Live and YouTube. We want to help you celebrate your fandom in all the best ways. So listen up, and we'll see you at the con.
Helm, report.
Sir, there's Klingons on the starboard bow.
Starboard bow?
Starboard bow!
What are they doing there?
They seem to be waiting for the new episode of Earth Station Trek.
Science, what do we know about this Earth Station Trek?
It's a podcast that treks through the history of Star Trek, from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between.
Navigation, how would one find such a podcast?
By setting coordinates for earthstationtrek.com or by doing a sensor sweep of Spotify, iTunes, or any other quadrant where fine podcasts are available.
Captain, what are we going to do about the Klingons?
We come in peace, Commander. Weapon station, shoot to kill.
Shoot to kill!
Shoot to kill!
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we got to let you know there's going to be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Action Comics 2022 annual number one. Little Clark Kent uses his super breath to steal the soccer ball away from Caleb Withers and score a point. Caleb is the new kid in class and a bully. Caleb threw dog poop at Lana, called Petey a commie, and called Ma Kent a heifer off the farm. Ma Kent explains to Clark that he's special, didn't have to make the goal to know he could do it. But someone like Caleb, making the goal could have made his day, changed his life even. Clark doesn't see it, but Ma Kent sees Caleb being scolded and bullied for not making the goal by his abusive father. Caleb kicks the soccer ball at Clark and it hits Ma Kent in the head, knocking off her wig. She is bald and obviously has been taking chemo treatments for cancer. That night, young Clark sneaks out of bed and goes to Caleb's house to get revenge on the bully. Clark overhears Caleb taking a beating and being verbally abused by his father. Caleb's father takes off drunk in his truck, drives through a field and almost into traffic. Young Clark stops him going into traffic and then takes him to the hospital. The next day, Caleb bullies Clark on the soccer fields, but Clark just walks away. When the other kids start teasing Caleb about his father, Clark stands up for him. Caleb gets angry and tries to punch Clark. Clark rolls with the punch and falls down so Caleb doesn't break his hand. Clark stands up and then tells Caleb he is not his father and you don't have to be him. Clark and Pa Kent are visiting Ma Kent in the hospital and learn she is going to make a full recovery. Caleb comes by to apologize to Mrs. Kent. Caleb shaved his head in support of Ma Kent. Caleb tells the Kents he is going to be living with his aunt Metropolis. Years later, Superman flies over the Mighty Oaks Youth Outreach Center. Caleb is there as an adult with a soccer ball helping a youth who has just dropped off. On War World long ago, a woman chastises her son for not striking an opponent in the back when he showed it. The son answers that striking an enemy from behind is cowardly. The woman reminds the boy that this is culling day. The weakest will be exiled along with the mother. The son and his mother are exiled into the wasteland. The mother swears that she is Warzone, and her son will learn to be Warzone too. They will have vengeance one day. The mother shows the son how to stay alive and catch food. The son must get his own food, though. She also teaches the boy that the Warzone does not protect. It is how they endure what the other cannot. Later on, the mother and son are being pursued by one of the tribes. A bull mammoth, some sort of giant carnivore, attacks and the tribesmen retreat. The mother tries to attack the creature and gets wounded. The boy attacks the creature and kills it. The mother sacrificed herself for the boy, but the boy had made a promise that he would return to kill Mongol. Because of his feat, the boy is brought on to the tribe. Years later, the boy returns to his original tribe, declaring himself Warzone. He kills one of the guards and then is allowed to pass. This is the beginning.
And one thing for our readers, just to be clear, Drew mentioned this, is that while reading this comic, you're getting back and forth between these two stories. So you're getting the juxtaposition of Clark's mom, Ma Kent, teaching him to be Superman, right? The good man, the you know, ideal that he grows into it to be as an adult. You see him learning those lessons. And on the other hand, as you see him getting those lessons from Ma Kent, we see future Mongol-to-be, so to speak, learning the exact opposite lessons at every single turn. We see a guy that has some natural humanity, which is interesting. Really, I thought a really interesting take, Drew, because obviously Mongol, rightly so, is always portrayed as just an absolutely bloodthirsty, vicious tyrant, right? Again, correctly so, as a villain. But we see here that how much of this was nurture versus nature, right? That even though he's growing up in possibly the most violent environment possible, he still had some inherent good in him, right? And it's sort of very intentionally weeded out by both his culture and specifically by his mom. And again, you see the exact opposite with Ma Kent. Again, Clark also has natural goodness in him, right? But that is cultivated and encouraged by his mom instead. And I love the interplay between the two stories. And once again, we see the thing that I think makes such Superman such a great character is the humanity, despite the effectively infinite power that he contains, that he could do all of these things, but he chooses not to. And what he chooses not to do is often what really makes him Superman.
Yeah, one thing I have to say, Cletus, is a lot of these annuals, they're usually not that great.
This was agreed.
This one was really good, I thought. And
very good.
I liked, like you, I know when I did my notes, it was easier for me to tell one story and then the other instead of going
absolutely
back and forth. But I like how they laid out the issue going back and forth like that. You could easily see if Mongol had a different type of mother, how he could have been a Superman type character. He had the characteristics there, and yeah. It was really interesting to see the change in him. And vice versa, you know, if Clark had a different type of mother, we could have seen him go the other direction too. Really interesting story.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you, Drew. Oftentimes the annuals are, it's interesting, Drew, that they still do them because they feel like a relic of the past when, you know, the annuals basically exist really to fulfill a certain quota of comics that have to come out per year. It's crazy to me that still applies, especially in an era where single issues are not the main sales force anymore. It's trades. So, like, there's even less reason to do these, frankly, often meaningless comics, right? Like, most of the time, not only are they not great, you also truly do not need to read them. And yet both, it's not just DC, Marvel pumps them out too. It's just, again, it's crazy to me cost-wise because I can't imagine most of the time that they're financially worth it. Like, I you know what I mean? Like, it's surprising to me that the comics industry is still seems beholden to do them. I don't know why.
Yeah, I agree with you. Plus, they're extra pages.
You have to pay the as you should, to be clear. You have to pay the creative teams to do these. You got to pay the publishing costs to print them out. And again, we have to emphasize this. Individual comic sales are not where it's at in the business at all. Like, that is just not what's bringing in money for comics anymore. That's unfortunate. I'm not saying that I wish that was the case, but it is. It just, the reality is that's what it is. and yet these annuals still get put out, and so often there's just so little effort put into them. And I want to be, again, just to completely reiterate that we've both said this, this is an exception to that. This is a very good comic. And the Action Comics run, we've both greatly enjoyed. This stuck out to me even within this run, Drew. This was a very good issue. This might be my favorite issue of their run.
Yeah, it's up there, that's for sure. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Batman 2022 Annual Number 1. Batman tries to recruit Ghostmaker to help run Batman Inc. Ghostmaker says no at first, but the idea gets in his head. Ghostmaker tests Batman's recruits to see what they are made of. Ghostmaker changes his mind, though Batman Inc. is less than thrilled to have Ghostmaker as their leader. Ghostmaker's first order of business is creating two divisions, local and international. The local teams will return to their hometowns and maintain peace and order, and the international team will deal with global scale threats. Chief Man of Bats, Batman of China, Night Runner, and Night are all local. Red Raven, Batman of Japan, Dark Ranger, El Gacho, and Wingman are all on the international team. Ghostmaker tells Clown Hunter how disappointed he is in his training. Ghostmaker doesn't want to train someone who doesn't want to be trained. He doesn't need a sidekick. Ghostmaker gives Bayo the opportunity to return to Gotham to go back to hunting Joker's castoffs. Ghostmaker and the international team head to Kazbek, Chechnya, to check on a village left abandoned by one of Lex Luthor's Batman experiments. Batman Inc. finds the streets empty and the houses shuttered. The team splits into groups of three to investigate. Upon investigating, Batman Inc. discovers from the villagers that Grey Wolf is out of control and is locking everyone up in a cell. Batman of Japan, El Gacho, and Dark Ranger are all unresponsive, and the trackers show them inside the prison. Ghostmaker and Clown Hunter will try and figure out which prisoners are infected and which are innocents. Raven Red and Wingman are tasked with finding the others. Ghostmaker discovers the prisoners have been infected with Lazarus resin that was making them angry and aggressive. Clown Hunter accidentally releases all the prisoners. Ghostmaker and Grey Wolf work together to round up the prisoners. Grey Wolf explains he was keeping people here until he could find a cure for them. Ghostmaker is able to find a cure and it's administered to the people. Ghostmaker brings Grey Wolf onto the international team. Although this was an interesting concept for the story, I think the execution of it was flawed. And I was reading the story and it just kind of wrapped up rather quickly. Like they ran out of space or something. Did you get the feeling of that?
I thought the ending was a little bit weird too, Drew, only in that I thought once they figured out that Grey Wolf was not in fact out of control and was actually, you know, doing the correct thing and was living up to the sort of Batman name, so to speak, and that they were misled by the other guy from the village who was seemed to be running the prison, I assumed that they were going to apprehend that guy, right? The other villager. But then it seemed like they interacted with him and there was no like finger wagging or anything, like any sort of like, you shouldn't have done that. You know what I mean, Drew? Like, that was the thing I think that really threw me off was I maybe misinterpreted, I don't know, that the other guy was actually the one responsible and was not necessarily a villain, but antagonistic on some level, right? And then it just sort of wasn't. That was the thing that threw me off in the end.
No, I think you missed it, Cletus. He was arrested.
But they talked to another guy that's like, sorry for trying to shoot you earlier. And I thought it was the same dude. And I was like, wait, what? Why are we friendly with him?
It wasn't the same dude. This was what was weird about the ending of the issue is it skipped ahead several days. The guy was already captured. The guy who apologized was one of his followers.
Gotcha.
So they had, when everybody's waking, because apparently whatever Ghostmaker threw into the prisons, they didn't have gas masks for it, put people out for several days. That must have been a powerful smoke stuff. But anyways, the bad guy was already captured, and they had already found a cure and were we saw them and start administering it and stuff. All the people that were infected had already been recaptured and stuff. So it was a weird time jump, which is what made the issue kind of felt like it ended abruptly.
Yeah, I agree, because I missed that. And I was not skimming, as I will fully admit I do sometimes with some of these comics. And I miss that. Yeah, I will say, Drew, I agree. This was definitely not as good as the Action Comics annual. I do think that this is another way to do a good annual, though, which is to set up. We've seen DC do this sometimes with their annuals, that this was obviously not connected to what they're doing directly in the main Batman book right now, but like building off of that and clearly building towards a future book and future Batman stories. Right. So like, I liked the concept a lot of the book. I agree with you, though. I didn't think the execution was fully there. I liked this Chechen Batman, Grey Wolf. I think that's a cool idea for a character. I like the concept of Ghostmaker running Batman Inc. I don't love, again, the execution of what they showed. I felt like they went a little too hard into him being a dick. Like, I know, Drew, I know that that's part of his personality that they've shown so far, but like, I don't. We have to compare it to Batman, right? Because he's normally who runs Batman Inc. and it's his book, right? Batman is also often shown as being off-putting and maybe not the most pleasant guy to work with. But you always see when a moment like comes down to it that he's really there and he really does care about the team. He's just like horrible at with emotions, right? It felt like there was a couple moments for Ghostmaker to, you know, be a jerk, but still show the same kind of leadership that you see from Batman. And I felt like he didn't. And I'm sure that that was intentional, Drew. I'm sure it was sort of meant to show that his leadership is flawed. But I don't know that they did enough to make it clear that they thought that that was a flawed move. You know what I mean? Because he does still ultimately succeed, but he kind of leaves his team out hanging out to dry for a bit.
Yeah, he does that. That's another thing about Ghostmaker. He feels kind of like a flake at times. So, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of Ghostmaker or Clown Hunter. So,
they're not my favorite characters by any means. I will definitely agree with that. It feels like there's potentially something interesting to do with those characters, especially together. They clearly are trying to do like some modern, more violent version of Batman and Robin. And I think that that's an interesting angle to explore, Drew, because you can kind of do that dynamic, but do it in a way that's not shackled by, you know, years of history that you kind of have to obey, so to speak, with Batman and Robin. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, there's an interesting storytelling avenue there, because you can essentially do a Batman and Robin story, but do it, you know, in a way that people haven't seen before that won't stick out as being out of character. I don't know that they've fully taken advantage of that yet, but maybe with the new Batman Inc. that they're doing, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a possibility that you could do something interesting with that.
Yeah, they're clearly wanting to do something with these characters, and we haven't got to the point where they basically have their own book, so there's a story somebody wants to tell, and I'm sure it's coming down the line.
Well, I think they are, am I remembering wrong, Drew? I thought they were doing a Batman Inc. book.
Are they? I can't remember if we had that in DC News or not.
Yeah, I'm not positive on that, but I thought they were. I mean, obviously we knew they were doing a Batman Inc. story. That, I know we at least knew that, Drew, because the fact that they were doing Batman Inc. was not a surprise, and not just because we just saw them in the Lex Luthor story. I remember knowing that that was a story that was coming, and I thought it was because it was a series that they were going to do.
It probably is. So, I don't know when it's coming, but it's coming sometime. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Shadow War Omega Number 1, Markovia in the Past. Brian Markov is told his country has been sold to Leviathan. Then Markovia is attacked and Leviathan is destroyed. In the present, the Demon Palace in Nepal. Brian wants revenge on Talia. In the present, the Demon Palace in Nepal. Brian wants revenge on Talia. Brian plans to kill her. Batman won't allow it. Geo-Force starts destroying the palace. Batman tasks Ghostmaker and Batman Inc. with getting everyone out. Black Canary shows up in the Batplane. Batman, Robin, Ravager, and Talia escape. Damian takes on Geo-Force by himself. Damian states that heroes don't kill. After Robin has defeated Geo-Force, Talia puts a sword to Brian's neck. Damian convinces Talia to change and show Brian mercy. Director Chase arrests Brian for the murder of Ra's al Ghul and has him in secure lockup in Belrive. Deathstroke's body was taken by the Secret Society, but Ravager is looking for him to confirm that he's really dead. Angel Breaker escaped with the remains of the Demon Shadow. Black Canary states she would search for her. Ghostmaker will continue to run Batman Inc. Talia honored the deal Ra's made and turned herself into the DEO and Director Chase. Batman tells Damian he will always have a place at his side. Batman gets a call from Oracle telling him that Killer Moth is back and has teamed up with Firefly. They are headed to the Slaughter Swamps. Batman and Robin are on the case. To be continued in Robin number 15. Epilogue. Slade Wilson is put in the Lazarus Pit by the Secret Society. Slade reemerges and states that he is killing everyone. To be continued in Dark Crisis number 1.
Just to add a little tidbit there to the end, one thing, if our readers haven't read this comic, when Slade is put in the pool, it doesn't appear to initially work, and then the pool turns black, so it may be connected to whatever the great darkness that we know is the threat in Dark Crisis. It seemed, I thought portrayed it as it didn't seem like your standard Lazarus Pit resurrection.
No, it wasn't, because we didn't see Slade go through the crazy that Ra's al Ghul usually does when he first emerges out. This was not that great of a comic.
No, it was dumb. And it's interesting, Drew, because it feels a lot like, if I'm being honest, it feels a lot like Bendis let Williamson kind of copy his homework but change it up a little bit. Right? Like it's... It's basically essentially a very similar concept to Leviathan. Now, granted, obviously it makes sense, right? Because it's coming out of Leviathan ultimately with the whole Geo-Force and Markovia thing. But like, it's kind of the same thing, right? This lesser known hero kind of breaks bad for, you could argue, justifiable reasons, right? His country is destroyed, and he doesn't feel anybody does enough about it, and he takes out the people he holds responsible for it in a way that he feels is the appropriate way to do it. Now, again, you can argue, like Damian does, that heroes don't kill, right? But again, in concept, honestly, very similar to what we see with Manhunter in Leviathan. And again, obviously, especially because it's tying to that story, I couldn't help but I was like, Williamson, like, my dude, you can... Are we just copying notes here? What are we doing? The other thing that I thought with this, Drew, and you run into, Williamson's not the only one to do this by any means. I mean, writers all over the place have done, and King, everybody knows I'm a big fan of, was guilty of this too with his Heroes in Crisis, with what he did with Wally. Now, you know, I thought that was a better comic, obviously, but again, and Geo-Force is a much lesser character, but I mean, somebody's going to have to contend with this down the road, right? Like, I Geo-Force is not that major of a character by any means. He's D-list, would probably be generous. But, I mean, still, right? Like, he kind of, if anybody wants to do a Geo-Force story in which he's a hero again, you're going to have to contend with this story that what was the point of it?
Yeah, I just think Williamson just picked somebody that he could actually do something like that with. There's a lot of other characters he wouldn't be able to, just because the fact he is D-list or lower. Now, Williamson did put his nice little bow on it. He's got Batman and Robin back together. Talia, I thought that was weird for her to turn herself in. That didn't feel like something her character would do, but we did that. We got Ghostmaker, you know, running Batman Inc. like they want to. And obviously, you know, Batman and Robin are together now, and the story is going to be continued in Robin 15, which makes me think that Williamson's still going to be writing that title. Please put somebody else on it.
I just think, I think my biggest problem with this story and with his Robin run in general, Drew, is it just feels like there's this fundamental misunderstanding of the Al Ghul family. I do not agree with his characterization of Roz that we've seen this whole time. I'm not saying that you can't have a sympathetic Roz. Honestly, he makes sense as a character to do that. We saw it done very well in the Nolan films, right? But the way he was doing it, this weird portrayal of him as a scientist, fell out of the freaking blue. And then, like you said, the Talia turning herself in at the end felt wildly out of character. Like, obviously she cares for her son, and it's like, it's portrayed as him convincing her to do the right thing, quote unquote. But like, why? It doesn't serve her interest at all to do that, especially now that Roz is dead, at least for now. Right? Like, it didn't really make sense to me. Beyond, like, her wanting to be a good mom, basically, which, like, I'm sorry, how often has she cared about that, Drew?
Yes, I know. So, yeah, a lot of this didn't make sense. And I don't know what he's planning to do with Slade and Dark Crisis, but I don't know. I'm not looking forward to the event. And I know we were wondering how long Dark Crisis is going to last. And I looked, it's going into December.
Oh, God.
I knew you wouldn't be thrilled about that either.
Oh, no, Drew. Oh, no. That's horrible news.
Yes. All right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Justice League Road to Dark Crisis number one. The first story is Team Up. Nightwing and Superman John Kent take out Brick and then have a discussion about superhero deaths. Dick has hope that they will come back like they have in the past. John convinces Dick to speak at the vigil.
So this is written, at least co-written by Williamson, and it just highlighted to me, Drew, and it felt like he understood this, the fundamental silliness, in my opinion, of killing the whole Justice League in a continuity story. Right? Because it means almost nothing. Like, Dick is just casually talking about, hey, remember the time your dad died, and then my adopted dad died, and then this other guy died, and this other guy died, and it just meant nothing in any of them? Because we live in a world where all these characters come back to life, Drew, and Dick shows a shocking awareness of this fact. It felt like Williamson was pointing to, like, hey, look how dumb this plot point is, but I'm doing it anyway. And I was like, my guy, if you're aware of it, why are you doing it?
Yes, I thought this story just pointed out how stupid his death of the Justice League was.
Stories that were frankly more important. Like, the death of Superman is a monumental comic in terms of comics history, right? Like, that's a major turning point in comics where, like, all of a sudden a major character dies. Honestly, for one of the first times we see something like that of that magnitude for Superman. And then he comes back not that much later, which also sets a huge precedent for all of a sudden these, like, you know, big twists for, you know, for publicity then that are quickly undone within a year. Right? Like, that had a lot of fallout within the comics industry, right? Like, that's a major moment. He's talking about that. He's talking about the time Bruce died in Final Crisis, which again is another major moment in DC history. And you know that he's trying to put this up there with them, right? Like, and then the time the whole Justice League died in the very famous Dark Crisis written by me. And it was like, dude, this isn't, I'm sorry, this book is not going to have the same relevance in DC history. It's just, it's not, Drew. It's just not going to.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's not. All right, our next story is called Life of Purpose. Iris is worried about Barry. Wally promises to search for him, but in the meantime, the Flashes are needed. Wally and Wallace go play whack-a-mole and stop a bunch of second-rate villains. When they split up, Wally stops by the Flash Museum and pays his respects to Barry. Wally gets a call from John Kent asking him to help stop Cobra.
It was a story, all right, Drew.
Yeah, a story. I wish I didn't waste my time reading.
It's not atrocious by any means, but, like, I mean, why, I guess, would be my big question.
Yes. Our next story was called Survivors. Hal Jordan is in pursuit of a dangerous interplanetary creature and requests backup from the Justice League. Hal follows it into Earth's ocean, and Aquaman Jackson Hyde responds to Hal's call for help. Hal tells Jackson that the alien symbiotic kind have eradicated all life from every planet oceans they visited. Jackson creates a ton of centrifugal force, and the creature is freed from the parasites. Jackson is staying in Atlantis, and Hal is going to find out what happened to the Justice League. Cletus, I did not understand how they helped this alien. And what happened to... If this alien was going to different planets and eradicating all life in the ocean or whatever, how did Jackson free him from these parasites? And where'd the parasites go? I was confused.
That's a great question, Drew, because I had the exact same question. I understood that whatever was happening was unintentional, because Hal, I think, literally states that I don't think this is with malice. I think, you know, these are unintended consequences, and we see them do something that destroys something, right? I guess it's the parasites, and then the creature itself says thank you, apparently. And I was like, but what? I agree, Drew. I was a little confused. I was like, I got the basic concept, right? I understood the basic arc, which was alien creature comes to the ocean. It's not intentionally harmful. They figure out a way to communicate it with it, essentially, and everything works out, right? Like, I understand that story. I just didn't understand the details with it. And it felt, if I'm being completely honest with you, Drew, like they didn't totally care either. It was such a lazy story in regards to, like, how many times have you read that exact story? And it felt like they just sort of, it was a paint by numbers, and they accidentally skipped a color and were like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. All right, our next story is called The Pariah. Before the fall of the Justice League, Pariah is being hunted by the ghost of his past, his family. They want him to build the machine. Pariah has decided that all the multiverse requires to thrive is for Pariah to do nothing. And Pariah is whisked away and tells the great darkness he will build the machine. This is another story that I just didn't get.
I at least, Drew, the only thing I will say for this story is I thought that this one, I did like the artist on this. It reminded me a lot of Joelle Jones' art style, if I'm being honest with you. I don't think it was her, but it looked a lot like her stuff. But I understood the point of this story. Like, this one was, I thought, the one that made the most sense to actually include in a lead-up to an event comic. Because we know from what we saw in the, like, issue zero or whatever it was, that Pariah is behind the Justice League's demise, right? And that doesn't totally make sense in the moment. Why would he do that? And this sort of shows the what appears to be corruption of him by the darkness, that he doesn't want to be a villain and gets corrupted by the great darkness and becomes what we see in the issue in which he kills the Justice League, right? Now, you can argue whether it's a good story or not, and that's totally fair, but I at least understood why they did this, and this one actually made sense. Like, if you're gonna do a like tie-in lead-in story, this is the kind of story that you should do.
Now, I agree with you, the artwork is good on this. I understand the story too, but I don't think they explained the corruption that well. It's happened with the snap of a finger. And I guess
and again, Drew, I totally agree. I'm not saying that they did it well, but I at least understood the idea of the story, if that makes sense.
Okay, that's fair. I just think they should have spent a little more time on his turn.
I would have preferred if they had just cut out one of the other stories that we read and done more with this. Because, again, this story made sense in terms of inclusion. Like, I get why you do this story. It's an important story to give us background info on what appears to be a major player for the actual event, right? And I agree with you. It's a little bit too short. It doesn't explain his corruption fully, and I totally agree, in a satisfying way. And I wish they had done more, but I at least... My takeaway with the other two, I was like, what are we doing? Especially, I mean, the other three, I guess. The Flash one in particular, I was like, what are we doing here, guys? And what was like, we could have taken those, 4 or 5 pages and done literally anything else that would have been far more beneficial. For imagine 5 extra pages for this story.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. All right, we had one last story in this, Because the Night. Gotham City, a museum. Nocturna has broken in to steal an artifact. Batgirl Stephanie Brown shows up and the two tussle. Then they have a discussion. When Nocturna leaves, she is approached by Firefly, who wants to recruit her for the Secret Society. To be continued in Dark Crisis number 1. I was confused in this story because I felt like Nocturna was a villain. And then her and Stephanie were having a conversation like they were best buds there for a little bit. And then Nocturna is getting recruited by the Secret Society, and I'm just like, what's going on? Or is there something I should have known about their relationship or something? I don't know. I was a little confused.
No, I agree, Drew. I think there's two things with this story. One, I felt like you needed some basic understanding of the Nocturna character that I certainly did not have. I felt like you needed to know her, right? Because there was stuff that I felt like the writers assumed you knew that I didn't know. I was like, I don't even know who this is, let alone why she's interacting so casually with Stephanie. And then two, much like the Pariah story, this one clearly was included because she's supposed to be relevant in Dark Crisis, right? Like that's obviously why this exists. She clearly is supposed to play some role in that story. I wouldn't be shocked if it's not that big of a role, but clearly they want her involved and they feel compelled to explain why she's there, I guess. That being said, that feels like that's it, right? They put it in here because they need to explain why she's in the event, but then they did nothing. Like, zero effort feels generous. They did nothing, Drew. It felt like somebody told them do a Nocturna story and somebody was like, "Kay," and just like drew a couple pages with her. You know what I like? There's nothing of substance in this story.
No. Now I'm kind of curious. We see that Firefly approaches her. We know Firefly is supposed to be in the Robin number 15 that Williamson's doing, so I'm sure he's going to kind of tie it into Dark Crisis somehow.
Do you think he's going to be in Robin 15? That felt like the ending of that Robin comic felt more like just a classic Batman and Robin off to fight a crime, and you can kind of assume how it ends. To me, I didn't get the impression, Drew, that we were going to actually see that specific fight next issue, but maybe we will.
I thought we were going to, especially after I saw Firefly pop up in this. So, you know, and I know Williamson's been writing it. I don't know if he's going to be continuing to write it or not, but I just assumed he was. I sure hope I'm wrong.
Oh, and you could be right, Drew. I don't know. I personally interpreted it as just a classic Batman and Robin jumping off of a rooftop together ending.
Yeah, it could very well be that too. I could be wrong also. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, DC Pride 2022 number 1. Now, this, I forgot how long the DC Pride issue is.
It's huge.
The main reason I wanted to include it is because the Tim Drake story, because we're getting a Tim Drake's one. I think, I don't know if it's a one shot or we're getting something from Tim Drake coming up in the next week or two, and I saw it was loosely tied to the DC Pride thing, so I wanted to at least go over that. And I knew there'd be some good stories in here, but with so many stories in it, I was like, let's just focus on some of the characters we read about a lot. So I picked Superman, John Kent. I picked Nubia, and of course, Tim Drake. So the first story we're going to talk about is Super Pride. John and Damian stop some bad guys and then go to the Pride Parade. Superman John Kent wears a rainbow cape that Jay made for him. Damian is more worried about someone attacking the parade. Superman makes a rainbow, and Damian comments that a preschooler can make rainbows, and then John kisses Jay.
Drew, go ahead and talk about your three, because then there's a couple others that I'm going to briefly talk about.
Okay. I don't have much to say about this story. Just I did find the you know, the dynamic between John and Damian funny, because Damian's all concerned about somebody attacking the parade, and that's his main concern. Yeah. And John's there to have fun. And
I thought it was, yeah, it's a great representation of the friendship between the two, right? Because Damian clearly cares, right? Just in his own unique Damian way. I thought this comic, you know, it's fine. I thought it was very similar to a lot of the stories that we saw in this issue that were obviously a celebration of, you know, people within the LGBT community. And we saw a lot of different, you know, representations of that. So we got, like, we had a lesbian character, we had bi characters, we had asexual. And I thought that was, and it was, again, it was just another one of those. We saw him, the importance of having a symbol like Superman representing the community at the parade, which is a cool idea. Not a lot of substance, but that's also wasn't really kind of the point of a lot of these stories, if we're being honest. So pleasant, right? A pleasant story, a simple story.
Now, the confession story, Nubia and Io are celebrating their anniversary, and Nubia tells Io the real story of how she broke her sword. Big Barda talks Nubia into helping raise money for a woman's shelter by wrestling Giganta, and the sword is broken when Giganta falls on it. I found this story interesting because they put an old DC cover in it, and it said it was from 91. I tried doing a web search to see if this was an actual comic, but I couldn't find anything. So I think they just did it for this story. But I don't know. I did enjoy that story. I thought it was kind of funny.
I really liked the art style that they did, Drew, to sort of represent the flashback, and doing kind of an older art style and coloring style to match was a really smart idea. Again, a really simple story, but like you said, a fun one. I like the idea of them being pro wrestlers, and Giganta and Nubia taking it a little bit too seriously, but not, you know, not so seriously that it becomes, doesn't feel like it truly becomes a legitimate fight. You know what I mean? Like, it was, again, another simple story, but another fun one.
Yes. And then the last one I want to talk about is called Special Delivery. Robin Tim Drake is late for his date. He gets distracted by jewelry thieves, the meta-villains Macro and Micro. They forget about the jewelry and go after the box that Robin is carrying, thinking it's very valuable. Robin takes them out when they are disappointed by what's in the box. Tim finally meets Bernard at the Pride Parade. The box has a cake that Tim made that was supposed to say Happy First Pride, but ended up saying Happy Fur Pry. Which, this was kind of a fun story, but the one thing I didn't like about it was the commentary Tim was doing in the boxes felt like it was distracting me from the story. That's one thing I didn't like about it.
Yeah, I agree. They were a little too disconnected from, like, obviously the thought bubbles or whatever they were definitely what the main point of the story was. Right. But I agree. It was very detached from the action. It felt a little bit like somebody had it. Honestly, Drew, I thought the written out stuff was a pretty good message and idea for what somebody wanted to communicate. But it was just it wasn't well done in terms of as a comic. Right. It was a little bit too detached from what you're reading visually, to the point where you have a hard time kind of following both. You kind of have to almost read and then go back and look at the pictures.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to portray. So it wasn't as good as I was hoping it would be. And one of the things I was disappointed, we didn't have the Tim Drake detective aspect to it either. So, but I'm sure we'll get more of that from a regular story from him. So at least I'm hoping.
Oh, I'm sure we will. In regards to those three, I think the three that you mentioned, Drew, were pretty representative of most of the stories that were contained in here, which, again, they were all fairly, the book itself is huge, but none of the stories are super long in and of themselves, understandably so. Obviously, understandably so, the focus of every story is whatever character's specific orientation that they focus on, like Connor Hawk is about his asexuality, right? And I totally understand why, because it's the Pride comic. However, my favorite ones that I
preferred were the ones that were certainly about the character's orientation, but wasn't necessarily the point of the plot, if that makes sense. Like, I personally liked Joe's comic, the Green Lantern, A, because it's a fun, they try and do a little bit of a gumshoe detective thing, and it's told in black and white with green accents. I love the artwork with that. And again, her sexual orientation is relevant to the plot, but it's also not, I didn't think, the point of the story, if that makes sense, Drew. And I thought it made the story a little more interesting to read because of that. And again, I'm not saying that I don't want them to discuss that. Like, again, that's the point of the comic, and I totally get that. But I thought the stories that there was a focus on actually telling a story in addition to celebrating that character's sexual orientation, I thought those were the ones that did the best for me readability-wise, just because it wasn't just like, hey, Connor Hawke is asexual, isn't that cool? Like, yes, it's important to put that representation in the comic, and I'm not arguing that they shouldn't do that, to be clear. But I liked, like, again, I liked Joe's because the story in and of itself was also interesting, while also being about a character who is a bi representation character. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And we've been seeing what you're talking about. We've been seeing that kind of thing as we've been reading the Superman comic, Superman, Son of Kal-El, where John's being represented, but it's not the focus of the story.
And it can't. And again, to be clear, it can be about that. Like, I thought, for example, a good way for a story to be about a character's identity while still having a relevant plot was Tim Drake's coming out story. Right, Drew? Like, ultimately, that story is about Tim coming to terms with his attraction to his friend, what he thought was his friend, right? And now current boyfriend. That was ultimately, the plot is about Tim discovering who he is. But in the midst of that, I felt like there was enough of a story there that it didn't just feel like, hey, Tim is bi or gay. We don't know. Some obvious queer, right? Some not straight. It wasn't just that, right? It was a story, and there's a plot that follows it. And yes, it is ultimately about his identity, but there was a lot of other things going on there that there was some nuance. There was some depth there. And another good example of this was the last story in this comic that I thought was, in my opinion, Drew, hands down the best story in this comic, was Kevin Conroy's story, of his sort of life story up leading up to the point where he gets cast as the voice actor for Batman, the animated series. That was a phenomenal story, Drew. I personally did not know his story, and I really enjoyed his telling of it, and kind of seeing his struggle with discrimination in the acting world, and then how he was able to, despite not being a comic book fan, how he was able to easily kind of relate to Batman as a character, kind of pretending to be two different people. It was great, Drew. What a great, great story. And I was thrilled that they included it in this. I very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a great story to include in this issue. I agree with you. It was probably the best story in there. And I didn't know that about him either, so it was really interesting. And he does one of my favorite portrayals of Batman in the animated series, so.
Yeah, he's a great Batman. And that's, I thought it was so interesting, Drew, that as good as he was, he basically knew almost nothing about the character going into it. I'm sure the guy knew Batman existed, but I'm not saying that. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, I thought that was really interesting that a guy that has clearly been so, so good in the dual role of Bruce Wayne and Batman. I thought that was so interesting how his own life circumstances kind of led to him to being such an ideal fit for the character.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not very often that a voice actor actually gets to play the same character on screen, too, because we did see him in the Crisis event.
Yeah.
So, pretty awesome.
Agreed. And I would say, honestly, this issue is it's a great issue because it's great to see DC actually taking time to give people who aren't used to representation, giving a chance to see heroes that are like them. I think that's awesome in the first place. But, like, in particular, I think this comic is worth checking out for the Kevin Conroy comic. Just, I thought it was really great.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
Hey, Mike, I think I might have the new promo for Earth Station 1 for the spring. Want to hear it?
Sure.
Celebrating over 12 years of bringing you all things geek, we're the Earth Station 1 podcast. No matter the topic, we have been showing you all sides of geekdom with interviews, reviews, discussions, con reports, and as always, the Geek Seat. Join Mike and Mike weekly at earthstation1.com or wherever fine podcasts are found. That's Earth Station 1. What do you think? Is it okay?
That's fine. We'll do better next time.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
And we're back. Let's talk The Flash, Season 8, Episode 19, Negative Part 1. Central City, 2049. Bart and Nora are playing video games when Iris calls. She disappears off the phone and reappears as a younger version of herself. Nora tries to take Iris back to 2022, but it seems the Steel Force is keeping her there. Barry and Jay are off-world. In the present, Flash continues to train with Mina, who is wearing a black Flash costume. Mina gets frustrated when she's thrown off the treadmill and wants to quit. Barry has a talk with her and reveals his true identity. Barry gives Mina a speedster name, Fast Track. Argus Supermax site, Lian Yu. Dion tells Thawne he will get everything he desires, but it will cost him his life. Dion kills Thawne. Flash races to Lian Yu when Chester detects temporal energy there. Flash finds Thawne dead. 2049. Iris learns that her body is flooded with negative tachyons. They are the cause of her time sickness. The negative tachyons in Iris's body are increasing exponentially and could kill her. Iris has a vision of the forces, but they are different. Nora decides to go to 2022 and get help. In the present, Eobard is talking with Mina about pushing herself too hard. The forces, Dion, Bashir, and Alexa, appear. They are here to kill Eobard. Dion freezes both Mina and Eobard. Flash shows up and Dion freezes him as well. Flash manages to shoot lightning out, striking the forces. Flash learns that these are the negative forces. Barry teaches Mina how to share her powers with Eobard and turn him into a speedster. When I was reading that, I was thinking, or when I was watching that scene, I'm thinking, anybody else think this is a stupid idea?
Drew, what an unfathomably stupid idea. What I think blew my mind the most was that the show didn't really have anybody question whether that was a bad idea or not. They just sort of like, no, we established that Eobard's good last episode, so you should have no qualms whatsoever with reintroducing Speed Force to him. I was like, oh my God, this is... Okay, anyway, continue.
It was Barry's... This is the problem I had with it. It was Barry's idea. He would be the last person who'd want Eobard to have speed powers. But anyways... Allegra, Chester, and Cecile fight off the forces while Mina shares her power. Flash saves them as they are about to be killed. Flash, Fast Track, and Reverse Flash all fight the negative forces. Flash gathers up all the lightning he can muster and throws it at the forces. Dion brings Iris in from the future, and she is struck by the lightning, killing her. The forces jump into Eobard, and the Wells Eobard rips off the skin of the old, and the evil Reverse Flash has been resurrected. To be continued.
In regards to the last scene, Drew, just to give an idea of how, in my opinion, unbelievably stupid this show has gotten. My girlfriend was in the same room doing her own thing, not paying attention to the show because it's bad. And to be clear, she used to watch the show, but it's not really worth watching anymore if you're not doing a podcast. So she's doing her own thing, but obviously she can hear what's going on, and she kind of looks up and sees the end where the Harrison Wells Eobard kind of rips the face off of the original Eobard, and she was just dumbfounded with how dumb it was, Drew. She was speechless. And I had nothing to add to it. I was like, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty dumb.
Oh, man.
So, things I want to talk about specifically, Drew, is the negative force versions of these characters. I think a fundamental problem that this show's had the last couple years is, one, the fact that they decided to adapt these other forces in the first place was, in my opinion, a poor choice. You can argue whether it was or not, and that's fair. In my opinion, it was a bad comic, and so it was a bad idea to adapt, because you're adapting an inherently bad idea. On top of that, and again, this is subjective, they somehow did an even dumber version of a dumb idea with those forces. Because at least in the comics, Drew, the characters that we see are like, they're basically the Flash for those forces, right? So the strength force that we see in the comic isn't literally the strength force, right? It's the avatar of the strength force. It's a person that possesses that force, much like Barry possesses the speed force, right?
Right.
The show decided not to do that and instead have the people on the show actually be the forces. Why I think that's a dumb idea, Drew, is that anything you do with them is going to feel, in my opinion, fundamentally a little bit silly and hard to follow, because these are supposed to be elemental forces and not people, right? And yet they act and behave like people, and they're also stoppable like people and not like elemental forces, right? Like the literal strength force isn't going to be a hothead person. You know what I mean? So it's hard. I think the scene itself is done poorly, just to be clear. Like from a showmaking standpoint, it's not done well. Let's get that off the table first. But I don't think it's set up for success when you have what is, in theory, elemental forces going up against Chester, who has no powers, and Cecile, who has whatever level of power they decide that day. Right? Like that scene, I thought that scene was fundamentally silly. A, in the way they executed it was terrible, but B, just on a basic idea. You've got what is low level powered heroes going against what should be elemental forces, and it's an actual fight. That's dumb. That doesn't make sense.
I totally agree with you, Cletus. Totally agree with you. Those forces should have been able to take them out in seconds.
Now, to be clear, I wasn't surprised that they didn't, A, because of course the show's not going to do that, but B, that's not the way they've portrayed those characters. They've portrayed them. What's weird to me, Drew, is it feels like they've portrayed them like they should be in the comics, which is avatars of those forces, right? But instead, they keep telling you, no, it is actually the still force, it is actually the strength force, or in this case, the negative versions of them. But they still act like people possessed by those powers. And that's the part that's frustrating and difficult to... And again, they've made it dumber with the fact that they're basically Barry and Iris's kids, which is just... Ugh. And now there's negative versions of them, which I guess if you're in the idea of like, well, if there's a speed force and there's a negative speed force, naturally there'd be a negative strength force, which wouldn't that be the weak force? I don't know. The basic ideas behind these are so dumb and flawed, Drew, that I don't know that any show could do a good version of these. But when you add on top of that, in my opinion, for the most part, subpar acting and very subpar writing, you get just what is a phenomenally stupid episode of television. Again, the basic idea is so bad, I don't know how you do something good with it. But then what they then do with it makes it even worse, and you just end up with this just... mess of a show. For people that are still enjoying it, I'm very happy that you are, and please don't let me get in the way of your enjoyment of the show. I am very glad that you do, but for me, it's unbelievable how far downhill this show has gone, Drew. It is so bad. I had a legitimately hard time finishing this episode, and I know that might seem hyperbolic, but really, like, I genuinely did not want to sit through 40 minutes of this.
I'm watching this episode today, right? And one of my sons comes in, "You're still watching that stupid show?" My kids have tuned out from it a while back. Yeah. So, oh man. We've watched it for this long. We can finish it, even though it's hard. We've only got one more episode, Cletus, of this season.
Thank God.
All right. Well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Superman and Lois, Season 2, Episode 15, Waiting for Superman. The two worlds are merging. Things from the other universe are appearing on this one and vice versa. Even people are being transported back and forth. Nat gets a message from her dad. John Henry is still alive but trapped between worlds. Lois and Sam get trapped on the Bizarro world. Tal returns. He goes to fight Allie and she begins absorbing his powers. Jordan knocks Allie into space and grabs Tal and brings him back to the farm. Natalie goes to the void between worlds to find her dad. She did not receive the message to bring X-Kryptonite to destroy the portals. Clark asks Tal to throw him into the sun. Clark believes that's the only way he can get his powers back. John Henry and Natalie transfer all their power to the pod and send it to disrupt the merging. Allie gets pissed and tries to kill John Henry and Nat. Superman emerges from the sun and saves them. Superman goes after Allie. Superman is supercharged. He's able to use the energy from the sun and separate the Allies from one another. Superman then is able to separate the Earths. Smallville celebrates the worlds being saved. Lois tells Chrissy that Clark is Superman. Jordan and Sarah make up. Lana lets Kyle know that he will always be in her life, but things will never be the same between them. Kyle asks for one last dance. Tal buys the boys trucks, and we learn that he travels to the Bizarro Smallville. John Diggle meets with John Henry. Diggle wants to talk about Bruno Mannheim, the head of Inner Gang. Money laundering, illegal weapons, and human trafficking. He's the man that killed the John Henry Irons of this Earth. John Diggle is trying to figure out why. The Kents go on an ocean adventure where Clark creates a new fortress in the middle of the ocean for the whole family to use. Clark's Kryptonian mother has some tech for Jonathan to use.
This episode was a little bit of a mixed bag for me personally, Drew. There were some things and ideas that I really liked that they did in this, but there was also some stuff and some decisions that I really either didn't like or I didn't understand why they did. Let me start with the good. I really liked the supercharged Superman at the end of the episode, and we got a chance to really see Superman be like truly super, right? That was very satisfying. And it's one thing I always like. One of the reasons, in my opinion, I've said this before, All-Star Superman is my personal favorite Superman comic, is because Grant Morrison just unapologetically lets Superman be super, right? Like he doesn't hold back at all. He doesn't like put him in blue jeans and make him walk across the country, which is an actual comic for people who don't know, right? Like he's genuinely super, right? I like that part about the character. I know for some people it's a little bit of a turnoff. They say he's too powerful, and that's fair, and I'm not going to disagree with you. But for me, I like Superman being genuinely super. I think personally that's what makes him – part of what makes him interesting. You can argue the opposite, but for me it's interesting seeing a guy be so supremely powerful and, again, choose to do the right thing. But it's also interesting to see him actually use that power, right, to demonstrate that – the dude is literally Superman.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second, Cletus. I got to say, I really like how they showed him being overpowered by his suit being lit up and his symbol being lit up. I thought that was really cool. And when Superman confronts Allie and he goes, "Oh, have some more," takes her hand, sticks it on his icon, and she's just overwhelmed with power, where Superman could just separate her. I thought that was cool.
I totally agree with you, Drew. I totally agree.
And it felt, the other thing I wanted to add is, it really felt movie-like when we saw Superman zipping around the Earth, like when he was trying to separate him. I like that too. I thought that was pretty cool.
I liked the callback of that a lot to the original Superman movie with Chris Reeves. I will say, as great of an Easter egg as that was, I didn't totally make sense as to why that worked, if I'm being honest, Drew.
I didn't care.
honestly, I didn't care that much either. That was not really that big of a downside to me, because I thought the whole pseudoscience of what they were doing with the merging of the worlds was unclear at best to begin with. So having an unclear resolution to as to how exactly Superman's plan worked was fine, because at least it was in keeping with the general sort of portrayal of that whole plot. I continue to really like what they're doing with Tal Rowe this season and kind of turning him into an ally. We've talked about this. I like that actor, and I really like this sort of kind of brash, arrogant version of Superman, essentially, that he does. It's interesting. There were some things, though, that Drew, that I thought were odd or confusing that they did that I also didn't like. One, and this is dumb, and I will admit, this one's a nitpicky one, but the idea of throwing Superman in the sun to supercharge him is a good idea. It's an idea we've seen before, right? And that totally makes sense. But the way the show had portrayed him was that he was effectively human, and then his brother, Tal Rowe, just brings him into space right next to the sun, and Soup's fine. Right?
You weren't the only one that had an issue with that, too. I was thinking the same thing when he took him into space. I'm like, wait a minute. He doesn't have any powers right now. How can he breathe out there?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I was like, wait, I'm willing to ignore the fact that they're just talking to each other in space. Like, I know you can't do that, but like in a comic book show, I'm generally willing to ignore that. And I was. That was fine. I was like, whatever. Okay, that's fine. But you told me this dude was basically human, and he's just chilling in freaking outer space right next to the sun. I thought that was, again, I'm sure the show just kind of didn't care and was like, whatever, you don't really care either, because you just want to see Superman get charged by the sun. And like, they're not wrong, but also I would have liked a little bit more thought put behind that. Usually, and the reason it stuck out to me, Drew, is because usually, for the most part, the show does put more thought into it than that. So I thought that was a little abnormal, because I feel like the writers aren't lazy in that regard most of the time.
The other point I want to bring up, too, is the fact that they told us that his cells weren't able to absorb solar energy. How is putting him in the middle of the sun supposed to heal his cells when they're not absorbing solar energy?
I thought not an uncharacteristically low effort explanation from them, Drew.
Yeah, they just wanted to... I understand them wanting him to be fixed, but they didn't take the time to do it correctly.
Agreed.
Even putting him in the fortress, and you know, remember that cell regeneration thing they had in Superman 2? They could have done something like that, and it would have made sense. Just saying.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree. The other thing, Drew, that I want to mention that I didn't like on the show, and this one was more of a confusion standpoint. Like, I feel like the show is a little unclear as to what they're doing. And again, this is uncharacteristic of the show in terms of, it feels like maybe people weren't totally paying attention or what. But we've been questioning a lot, Drew. Like, they've definitely made a point to not interact with any of the other CW stuff, to the point where we've been unsure whether this is the same Superman that we've seen in, like, Supergirl, right? Obviously, it's the same actor, but, like, it's been unclear at best, right? We got a line this episode from General Lane saying that they're essentially saying there are no other heroes. I've seen worlds where there are heroes, but this world just has your dad, right? And I didn't mind that line. I was like, oh, this, I felt like that was the first time that they were fairly explicit that this version of Superman is basically a solo act, right? And so I have no problem with that. But then we get one of the last scenes of the show, Diggle pops up. And remember that we've seen Diggle pop up before working with Argus. Drew, that's the same Diggle. We literally saw that Diggle trying to figure out who he was, the whole whatever fake Green Lantern thing. It felt like the show like threw a line to be like, yeah, we're not attached to the CW-verse, and then like still uses characters that are definitely CW-verse characters. I you know what I'm saying, Drew? I felt like the show was trying to have its cake and eat it too there.
Yeah. I have to agree with you on that, because he was... We did see the Diggle from the other...
That's not an alternate Diggle. When the, what has been portrayed by the show, that's not an alternate Diggle. That character was the same Diggle that was trying to figure out what was going on with the Green Lantern ring. That's what I'm saying. So, like, they're kind of contradicting themselves in terms of connectivity.
I think what the show was trying to do... I think the reason they throw that line in there is they wanted this world to be separate, but they didn't resolve the Diggle thing correctly.
And it, honestly, I think they could have gotten away with it, Drew, by just not having him on the show again. Like, if you have him pop up in that one episode and you never address it again, who really even thinks about it? Right? Like, obviously, you and I pay attention to that sort of thing, and we're more likely to see that. But, like, honestly, if you never put Diggle on the show again, I don't know that I'd even care or pay attention. Right? But then they bring him back in the last scene. And again, I'm not complaining that he's on the show, to be super clear. I liked the scene between him and John Henry. I'm happy that it looks like maybe they're going to be working together, or at least introducing John Henry's next story for next season. I have no problem whatsoever with that plot. My only issue is that it's contradictory to what they just literally tried to establish.
I think Cletus, moving forward, they're just going to ignore the fact that that's the Diggle from another Earth. So I think moving forward, you're going to see that if we see that Diggle again, he's going to be from that Earth, not from a different one.
Yeah, but that's and that's fine, Drew, but it still feels like having your cake and eating it too to me.
Yep, that's what they're doing. I bet you we go forward, they're just going to ignore that fact. Well, that's what I see happening.
No, I don't think you're wrong, to be honest.
And I'm glad you brought up the inner gang thing, because that feels like what we're going to be, that feels like what the villain's going to be for next season. We're going to be dealing with inner gang. And we can see that the John Henry from that Earth has ties to it. So it'll be interesting to see what the John Henry on that Earth's life was like. And we might even see John Henry go undercover and stuff, pretending to be that. Well, that Diggle's supposed to be dead, but they may use that. They may use that against Inner Gang. So it'll be interesting, that's for sure.
I agree, Joe. I'm very curious to see that plot. It's an intriguing and exciting plot. And honestly, I really don't care if Diggle is involved in it. Like, I want to emphasize, that's fine. It's just odd that they did that literally in the exact same episode that they, to my knowledge, Drew, it's the first time that they've been pretty explicit that it's not supposed to be in the same world.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm sure that if you were the Superman show, you might want to be distant yourself from the other CW shows too.
Oh yeah, and yes, and I agree, Drew, and honestly, I don't blame them at all. I wouldn't eat, like you said, I probably would want to distance myself too. That is more than fair. I don't blame them one bit. It's just odd to me that you would say that in an episode, justifiably, to be clear, but in the exact same episode introduce something that contradicts that. That was the only thing I was like, you couldn't have thrown that line in like a couple episodes ago. I don't know that I would have noticed it as much, Drew.
Yeah, I agree with you. They kind of goofed there, but the show's kind of positioned itself where it's gonna feel a little fresh. We now have Lana and at least Lana and Sarah knowing that Clark is Superman, and we saw in this episode that Lois told Chrissy too, so they're gonna have a different dynamic. I mean, I found it funny that we get that Lois and Clark dancing, and then Chrissy's just staring at Clark because she's basically starstruck with him because it's Superman, you know. And I think they're going to play into that more next season, and I think it's going to be funny. So, Oh man. So I'm looking forward. I'm really looking forward to next season. Inner Gang. We got John Henry's ties to it. We've got Lana and Chrissy knowing Clark's identity, so we have more people in the fold. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And we haven't talked about this yet. We now have the Fortress of Solitude. They didn't tell us what ocean it was in or anything, but I'm guessing it's where it is in the comics now.
Yeah, and I liked that change, Drew, because I thought it was, honestly, I thought it made more sense in the show for why he would move it to, like you said, somewhere in the ocean, possibly not the Bermuda Triangle. But it made sense in the show, right? Because the Arctic one is so inaccessible to anybody else, which is sort of the point. But like with his family, John can't go there. Lois realistically can't probably go there. So having it be in the ocean, which is far more hospitable climate-wise in terms of the fortress itself, I thought was a great explanation. And I thought made much more sense in the show than what felt, frankly, fairly random in the comics.
Yeah, and I'm excited that John's going to be using some Kryptonian technology. That's going to give him a one-up because he still doesn't have powers yet. Not that that's not, that can't
would
change
at
some
point.
Would
you say he's leveling up, Drew?
Yes, I would. And I'm sure we're going to see Lois using the Fortress too, so she'll probably be using some Kryptonian technology too. So we're going to see more of the family joining in Superman's adventures, I'm sure. And
one thing I'm hopeful for with this new fortress is that it maybe resembles internally more of what we're used to with the fortress and not what appears to essentially be a empty cave.
Yes, I'm sure it's going well. The outside of it looked a tons better just in this episode.
Agreed.
And if they're going to be spending more time at it, I'm sure we're going to get a nice set of it. So I hope they could include things like Kelix and the statues of Clark's parents and stuff like that that we're used to from the comics. I hope they have some of that stuff in there too.
That would be fun. Just one last thing I wanted to mention, Drew, that I appreciate that this show has done is as of now, at least, they continue to resist the urge to have Superman fully reveal his identity as he has in the comics. If you prefer him being completely out as Superman, that is fine. Personally, I don't. I like the dynamic of it. To me, you lose the point of Clark Kent if everybody knows that Superman is Superman. And so, especially for this show and the focus on Clark as a family man, I like the fact that, yes, more people know, like you mentioned, and that's fine, but not everyone knows. And there were several moments, Drew, that they felt like they could have had him just be like, surprise, I'm Superman. And they didn't do it. And I appreciated that.
Yeah, there was one time I was like, oh no, he's going to reveal his identity. And he didn't. I was like, phew. Because I don't want to see that either. I like the identity. And like you said, it'd be a totally different dynamic if everybody knew he was Superman. Because he'd be more of a celebrity. And with his secret identity, he can be Clark. He can be the family man without being the celebrity. Which we kind of saw what that would look like on the Bizarro world.
Yeah. And we saw it in the comics, Drew, how different his life working at the planet was when people know that he's Superman. Right? Like, he's still trying to be Clark Kent, to be clear. It's not like Superman himself fundamentally changes. But it's not the same, right? You don't get the same level of humanity. Not because he's changed or he's less human in the way he behaves, right? But because the other way people treat him, they very understandably treat him like freaking Superman, right?
Right.
He's no longer just the dude working down the next cubicle. He's Superman. And it becomes even weirder the fact that he's sitting in that cubicle because you know that he's Superman, right? So, like, I just personally, I don't like that change in the comics. I hope some point, probably years down the road, that they go back. Who knows if they ever will. But I appreciate that the show has not gone down that road because personally, I prefer Clark having the different identities. It's much like Bruce Wayne and Batman. I don't think it makes sense for people to know that Bruce is Batman either.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Now, it's different for somebody like Hal Jordan, who's basically a space cop.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's his job, right? It frankly makes more sense for somebody to know Hal is Green Lantern because he's a space, like his job is to be Green Lantern. Right. Yes. I mean, yes, he's also a test pilot and we see versions where they focus on him also trying to do that in addition to be Green Lantern. But for the most part, his like actual job is Green Lantern. Whereas like Clark has like a, I feel like the emphasis on Clark having a human job is much more strong than somebody like Hal. And even Hal, I feel like they're inconsistent on whether people know that he's Green Lantern or not.
Yes, they are. We've seen it both ways before. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, it ended last week, but I enjoyed watching the finale of The Boys Season 3. We've talked about it a bunch, Drew. It's so funny. And it's a great parody of superhero comics in general, obviously, especially the Justice League. This season was so good. I love that show. I can't wait for more.
I'm going to be starting it soon. I have to finish the last episode of Stranger Things. Yes, it's been several weeks that I haven't had a chance to finish Stranger Things yet, but that is on my docket to finish real soon. And then I'm going to rewatch season 1 and 2 of The Boys and then go into season 3. That's my plan. So excited about doing that soon. As soon as I finish Stranger Things. And I still haven't seen the new Thor movie. I'm planning on seeing that in this next week. So maybe tomorrow. But we'll see what's going on. But yeah, I have a lot of things I need to watch. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to give a shout-out to the Flopcast, especially to Cornflake for announcing the Talkville podcast on their show. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known about it because I saw no DC news about it this week. And I even tried to Google it. All I was finding was YouTube videos. I'm like, didn't anybody announce this show? So I just wanted to give out a shout out to Kevin and Cornflake at the Flopcast for letting us know about the Talkville podcast. Because now that I know about it, I'm excited about checking it out. And they've only released the first episode, so I can get on board right away. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we have Batman Catwoman. We've got Batman 89. We've got the Joker. We've got Dark Knights of Steel. We got the Justice League versus the Legion of Superheroes. Aquaman Andromeda. We've got two issues of Batman. We're going to review 124 and 125 and the season finale of The Flash. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil fight. Beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.